This year's Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to two journalists, a clear message that press freedom is crucial for peace and democracy. But with journalists increasingly being targeted around the world, how do we protect press freedom? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. Many governments have been cracking down on journalists and blocking the flow of information. Hundreds of journalists around the world have either been jailed or killed because of their work. But the Norwegian Nobel Committee has just sent a strong message to those fighting for the freedom of expression. It's awarded this year's Nobel Peace Prize to journalists Maria Ressa of the Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia. Ressa is the co-founder of the Rappler news outlet and was recognised for her coverage of President Rodrigo Duterte's controversial campaign against drugs. Muratov is the editor-in-chief of the Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta and a critic of the Kremlin. Both journalists have been threatened by their governments in order to silence their publications.
It's never been as hard to be a journalist as it is today. This is my 35th year as a journalist. And imagine the Philippine government filed 10 arrest warrants against me in less than 2 years. I've never lived through anything like that. And I guess, there is justice. There's an end to the darkness.
This award is for Anna Politkovskaya, Yuri Shukokin, Igor Domikov, Anastasia Baburova, Stas Markelov, Natasha Estemirova, our fallen colleagues who gave their lives for the profession. I am not the right beneficiary of this prize. You know, since the Nobel Peace Prize is not awarded post-mortem, I believe they invented a way for Anna to receive this award through other hands. It is my assumption.
Well, Reporters Without Borders says the situation for press freedom is very serious in 73% of the 180 countries it surveyed. The group says there's been a dramatic deterioration in access to information, while the pandemic has been used as an excuse to block journalists reporting in the field. Norway ranks first on the Worldwide Press Freedom Index, while China, Turkmenistan, North Korea and Eritrea are at the bottom. And the number of jailed media workers hit a new high last year, with at least 274 journalists in prison around the world. So let's bring in our panel. Our first guest is this year's Nobel Peace Prize recipient, journalist Maria Ressa, the CEO and executive editor of Rappler. She joins us from Manila. From Paris, we're joined by Christophe Deloire, Secretary General of Reporters Without Borders, and from Amman, Daoud Koutab, a journalist and board member at the International Press Institute. A warm welcome to you all. Maria, we've got to start with you, of course. Congratulations again. You have been and continue to be an inspiration to so many people around the world and to us, your colleagues in the world of journalism. Now you've had some time to reflect, now that the news is, I hope, beginning to sink in. How do you feel? Are you going to be able to travel to accept your award?
I don't know. And I am so thankful that the Nobel Committee really spotlighted what journalists around the world are going through. Christophe knows more than anyone. I mean, we've gone through many things together. And Daoud also with IPI, I also sit on the board with him. It's just been an extremely difficult time. And I hope that this will give us all some lift. I certainly hope to feel it in the Philippines by first being allowed to travel to Oslo to accept the award.
Amal Clooney, your lawyer, said that she sacrificed her own freedom for the rights of journalists all over the world, and I'm grateful to the Nobel Committee for shining a light on her incredible courage. I hope the Philippine authorities will now stop persecuting her and other journalists and that this prize helps to protect the press around the world. Is this work, Maria, going to make your work any easier? Are you going to feel safer? Or do you think that by shining a spotlight even more upon your work, it's actually made your life more dangerous?
You know, I've gone through this already, Adrian. I mean, in 2018, in December, when Time magazine named me as one of the persons of the year, look, Jamal Khashoggi had just happened, right? Shocked all journalists around the world. This could happen. And that's when Time didn't tell me that I was one of the persons of the year. And when I saw it announced, I had I felt like I got punched in my stomach because I thought that my life was going to get worse, that I would become targeted even more. And yet what it showed me is that these kinds of instances, when there is a brilliant spotlight, that they're actually, they form a shield, and it allows you to do much more. It allows you to speak much more. And what I learned in all of this is that when you have a little bit of that spotlight, just like, you know, with Amal, for example, I feel like we in Rappler have a little flashlight. Amal has Klieg lights. The Nobel has, like, you know, light, a global light. So I hope that, you know, not only will it make it easier for me personally and for Rappler to do our jobs even better than we've done before, but also to help other journalists in similar situations. Certainly, that's also, I hope, what happens to Dmitry and in Russia.
I wanted to ask you about the Philippines in particular. Will this award impact upon the lives of your colleagues there? Will it change anything for them, make their professional lives easier?
It's certainly coming at the right time. It is the tail end of a 6-year term of President Duterte. We're walking into elections. Our last statistical surveys have shown that Filipinos feel less afraid to speak. You know, this has been our biggest problem, is that we live in an environment of violence and fear. Well, that fear is lifting, and we're walking into elections, hopefully, a time when we will see more Filipinos exercising their rights and their voices.
Has there been a time, any time recently, where you felt that this just isn't worth it? It's not worth the risk to my own personal safety?
No. Isn't that crazy? I mean, part of it is because this is my 35th year as a journalist. You heard me say it, right? And I guess at the beginning, when the Philippine government attacked me and Rappler, I was like, this is ridiculous. And you just took the step forward. And every time, I felt like Alice in Wonderland falling into the rabbit hole. I was in disbelief when I was arrested in February of 2019. I was shocked. Like, these cases should never even have made it to court. But what I wound up doing is I realized we live in a different world, and that the law can be bent to the point that it's broken. So I just held the line. So no, I think the time when you do your job best is when you are stressed, when you are stretched, and then you find out who you really are.
And holding the line, there it is again. That's what it's all about. Christoph, autocratic leaders aren't going to change their behaviour simply because two of their antagonists have been recognised so publicly. I mean, apart from Maria was talking about shining a light on the issue of press freedom, the dangers facing journalists around the world, is this really going to make any difference to those who are facing harassment, intimidation, threats and violence in the course of their everyday work?
It will not make everything easy, but it should make things easier, for sure. But I want to take the opportunity to really congratulate and thank Maria for not only for the Nobel Peace Prize, which is really well-deserved, and this is a very good choice, but also for all the work she's done for years, as she mentioned, 35 years. But as a journalist, as a press freedom fighter, as a press freedom activist, and also as somebody who describes perfectly what happens with these information cows, the social networks, the destruction of our rights and potentially democracies, and the fact that we have to address this. I get back to your question. Let's have a look. Even the Kremlin published a positive press release about an independent journalist. Who would have considered that it could happen? So it's really obvious that such a prize has such a symbolic power that it can help to promote the cause of independent journalism, quality journalism, in front of despotic regimes, also in front of all those who weaken journalism and democracy, including maybe digital platforms and social networks.
Christoph, here I am, a journalist interviewing three other journalists. Is there anything you'd like to ask Maria about her win right now?
I was not in the spirit of interviewing Maya, but I hope I can express what I hope is that we've been working together, as Maya mentioned, on many issues, and especially regarding the information chaos. Maria is a key actor of the initiative on information democracy. We try together to impose democratic safeguards in the digital space. And I deeply hope that we will continue to work with Maria, because what she has such an impact. I think that what she's done until now, which is already incredible, is just the beginning of something bigger. And I know Maria well, I think so. And I know that she will use this prize, that it will not be only a recognition, but something that she will use to have a leverage effect and have a better information ecosystem, a better freedom for journalists, a better safety for journalists, et cetera, at the end, a better right to reliable information for everybody, because this is a right for all citizens and human beings.
Daoud, why is this award so important? What message was the Nobel Committee sending with this award, and does it matter?
Well, the message it's sending is that there is a clear relationship between peace and good journalism and professional journalism. You know, our colleagues who are both colleagues with us at the International Press Institute are people who are speaking truth to power. And when you speak truth to power, you're basically exposing the lies of dictators. And journalism, when it's done right, when it's done professionally, as we've seen in our colleagues, it can be a very strong tool for peace. So this is a peace prize, but it's showing that dictators are, you know, the opposite of peace, and that journalism and truth in journalism, professional journalism, is what is the antidote for the lots of leaders who are using, you know, their power, their presence, their dictators, megalomania leaders who are telling lies to their people. So it's speaking truth to power, and I think they're well-deserved, and it's a very strong message for peace.
And what about journalists who find themselves currently imprisoned because of their work, particularly in the Arab world? What message does this award send to regimes who routinely imprison journalists?
It's a powerful message. You know, we had the Pandora documents the other day, and we had a hard time publishing it in our own country because of the repression of governments. And this kind of prize gives a lot of strength and courage to people who are willing to take risks and go out and tell the truth. So it's a fabulous prize for the well-deserved, but it's also a message to all journalists and all leaders and government officials, that they are going to be in big trouble if they continue to repress the media. Now, one prize is not going to change things, but I think it's a strong message.
Maria, where does journalism stand in the link between peace and truth and freedom of expression, given that disinformation threatens peace? What's our role as journalists with regards to disinformation?
So the crazy part is, this is something I've been saying for 5 years, right? In 2016, Rappler demanded accountability from an end to impunity from President Duterte's drug war and Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook. And this is the biggest problem. I think you talked about this link, right? The distribution platforms for news today is no longer in the hands of journalists. We lost our gatekeeping powers to technology. Technology platforms now distribute the news. And the biggest problem is, a platform like Facebook, the world's largest distributor for news globally, actually prioritizes the spread of lies laced with anger and hate. It spreads it faster and further than facts. So you can say that the platforms that distribute, the social media platforms that distribute news, are biased against facts, and they're biased against journalists. What happens to a world without facts? You don't have a shared reality. It's a cacophony, right? And that's exactly what we have right now. When facts and lies are identical, when algorithms distribute the lies further and faster. Here's the last part. There are meta-narratives, power geopolitical power are seeding meta-narratives in our information ecosystem. And those meta-narratives change the way people think, what they think and how they behave. So, for example, in January 6th in the United States, right, this is findings by a group of academics in the U.S., what they found is that the meta-narrative for Stop the Steal that led to the Capitol Hill violence was seeded a year earlier on Russia Today, on RT, and then picked up by Steve Bannon on YouTube, spread in closed groups, then picked up by Fox, Tucker Carlson, and then finally QAnon, and then it came top down from President Trump. It's the same thing that has happened in the Philippines in terms of the meta narrative of journalist equals criminal. This is the world we live in today. Our shared reality is torn apart and we're off in a matrix type world. What do journalists do in this? We have to keep doing our jobs, even as we demand accountability from these platforms.
Christoph, you share that concern about it's not just authoritarian regimes here. We're talking about non-state actors as well who muddy the waters and spread disinformation and propaganda. I mean, that is a serious threat, isn't it, to peace and freedom of expression?
Yes, because journalism is about facts. I mean, journalism worthy of the name. And when you have facts, you may disagree. And of course, facts will never abolish disagreements. But at least you can agree on the disagreements. You can talk. When you lose the notion of facts, when just the digital space, the way it is organized, amplifies just pure passion, just amplifies lies, amplifies falsehoods and hate speech, it destroys civil concord. Remorse can lead to wars. We know from the history that some media, not journalistic media, but media in the past, they could just lead to wars in case they just spread propaganda or lies or hate speech. And we are in such a period where really we have to find ways to secure a digital space where we can have a peaceful public debate, and journalism has a very important contribution to bring to this.
Dawood, I'll come to you in just a second, but first let me just throw that back to Maria. How do we do that, though? How do we ensure this free exchange of ideas, this freedom of expression, but sticking to the facts and not spreading disinformation is embodied into law around the world?
Yeah, I think the first is old power, governments, states. Look, let me say it this way. The biggest crisis we're facing was actually stated by a biologist, an American biologist, E.O. Wilson. He said that we're facing Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. The technology has been allowed to run rampant. The institutions are just catching up. You've seen what the Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen had told to the U.S. Senate committee last week. And then the last part is this godlike technology. So I think the first step is regulations, right? And the platforms do say they want regulations. The states have got to go there. Now, which state are you going to want to have regulation? And this is where I think Christoph and the Forum on Information and Democracy is moving ahead to look for multilateral solutions. We have to look at this time period very similar to what happened post-Hiroshima, after World War II, when the world looked in shock at what humanity had done to itself. They all came together. And what happened? You had Bretton Woods, you had NATO, you had the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and you had the UN. This is another one of those moments. And I think, you know, the Nobel Committee actually showed you how important information is. Our information ecosystem has had an atom bomb explode. And it is continues to insidiously manipulate us. This isn't going to take one nation or one company part of my problems in the Philippines, these legal cases were enabled by the information operations on social media that those algorithms empowered, right? So we can't have integrity of elections in our May 2022 presidential elections unless the platforms voluntarily allow facts to surface or guardrails are put around tech.
Dawood, are we at a pivotal moment? Where do you see the threats, not just to democracy today, but to peace and freedom of expression?
Well, we are at a very important point because social media is going crazy and everybody now has access to information. And I think if we can't differentiate between lies and truth, if we can't differentiate between fake news and real news, and if we can't show that journalism does make a difference, then I think we will all be lost. And it will not be a few, but all of us will be lost because the powerful, those who own, have the money, have the guns, and who control many airwaves will determine our future. And I hope it is a turning point towards good journalism, good honest journalism, and the truth, because the truth is the antidote of a lot of the dictators around the world.
Maria, a few days ago on Inside Story, we were talking about the Facebook whistleblower who gave testimony last week. In a Washington Post opinion piece, Nina Yankovic says that while the award, your award, is a victory for free expression and a reminder of the critical role of the Fourth Estate and the role that it plays in upholding democracy, it's also a huge blow to Facebook, which you've described as tainting the entire public sphere by allowing lies to get on the same playing field as facts. Is your award a blow to Facebook?
I would say to more, to social media platforms, to these American companies that have failed to guard the public sphere. Look, it's okay. You can take away the gatekeeping powers from journalists. You can take the money. That's the other part we haven't talked about, right? Advertising for news organizations have collapsed on the very and have gone to the very same platforms that are used to attack us. But you cannot abdicate responsibility for the public sphere. We're frenemies, Facebook and I, because I do think they're part of the future and they should stop dragging their heels. They should embrace that they must differentiate between fact and fiction and change those algorithms.
Christoph, you agree with that?
Sure. I think democratic institutions, democratic decision makers have to take their responsibilities. We cannot accept any longer that digital platforms just pass the laws, adopt the norms of the digital space without any democratic control. The question is now, how, which type of responsibilities? And this is exactly what we work on, a working group of the Forum on Information Democracy, co-chaired by Maria and Mariette Schaake, did issue 250 very concrete recommendations. Now we have to implement it.
Okay. I'm afraid we're out of time. Many thanks indeed to all of you. Maria, congratulations once again. Christoph Tulloir and Dawood Khatoub, thank you for being with us. As always, thank you for watching the programme. Don't forget, you can see it again at any time, but just by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us at our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter, our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for being with us. We'll see you again. Bye for now.